This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about how to get into CEDH in the year of 2024. Now, we're recording this in August of 2024, so this is near the end of the year already, or at least past halfway through.
We wanted to make sure that we had enough data on the year so that we could say that we can talk about it in 2024 officially.
Right, yeah, we're going to be talking about the resources that you can use, what CEDH is, some of the decks you can see, a whole bunch of stuff about CEDH.
Yeah, this is great.
This is great.
So let's just get into it. So I figured the first thing that we should talk about is pretty much what is CEDH.
Start from the top.
You got to start somewhere. So let's start somewhere. From there, okay, right? Yeah. So, what is CEDH?
Competitive Elder Dragon Highlander. That's really helpful.
That is very helpful, yeah. So, this is really just a metagame of Commander, I would call it, where the intention is playing your Commander deck to the fullest potential, to the highest power that it can possibly be played.
Yeah, all of your decisions focus around making sure that it gives you the highest percent chance to win.
Yeah, I guess it is more of like a mindset too, because it's how you think about your deck when you're building your deck. It's how you think about the metagame as a whole, and it's how you think about like your decisions as you are playing the game, right? Each specific action that you're taking is something that will help you play to win.
Yeah, I also think it's kind of like a meta game in that it's really all, like, it's a rule zero conversation. We're playing CEDH. When you're sitting down with the table, everyone knows what CEDH is. Once you say that's what we're playing, the expectations are set. That can be a little bit tricky in some games of Commander, especially with new people. You don't know exactly my deck to seven. You don't really know what that means. But if we all say we're playing CEDH, we all know what to expect. So there's no feel bads normally. I mean, there's rare situations, but it gets rid of a lot of the feel bads in my experience.
I totally agree. Like any of those social awkwardnesses with like someone bringing overpowered decks, that doesn't really happen in CEDH pods because we all have the same expectation coming into a game.
Yeah, and even if some of the decks are stronger, Timnacrom is going to be better than name a bad deck.
Old Gnawbone? Old Gnawbone. Sure. That would be a horrible CEDH commander, yeah.
No, that is the one that has the, it has a line,
I was
right?
Thinking of old Stick Fingers.
Oh, Stick Fingers, yeah.
But Old Gnawbone, it sucks because Old Stick Fingers looks like a skeleton and is bony, but Gnawbone is a dragon.
Gnawbone is the dragon that was a legendary that makes treasures when it connects.
So you
that
could
would be
understand where
deck.
My confusion came from.
Yes. What were we talking about?
We were talking about what CEDH is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's closer to Timnacrom than it is Old Gnawbone. That much I know.
I also kind of feel like CEDH as a format kind of feels a little bit more like the constructed formats.
Yes.
Like Modern and Legacy and even Standard, where like there is a general metagame and there is now, in 2024, tournament data that we can go to start to suggest what the best decks are and figure out like what a metagame is actually going to look like.
Right, yeah. For a long time, we didn't actually know what the best decks were. We know that there were some very good pilots that could win a lot of games with certain decks, but there just weren't enough tournaments for a long time. But in the past, I would say 5 years, but more recently, like 2 or 3 years, there's been a lot more CEDH tournaments, and we have a lot of records of that, and we're going to talk about how to access some of that stuff, too.
It's really snowballed, especially. So, like, and it's just continuing to grow momentum. So, this is an awesome time to get into CEDH and be watching this video.
Right.
So, we can get a great idea for what the philosophy of CEDH is from going to CEDH.guide.
Yeah, this is our first resource that we're talking about.
Yes.
Write this one down.
One of many, yeah. So CEDH.guide is a website that was curated by Ken Bauman and some of his friends, too.
I think other people were involved.
But I think this really does the best job of kind of detailing what the CEDH mindset is, especially if you're coming from casual EDH, because I think there's a lot of bridges that need to be crossed in order to, you know, kind of reach that CEDH mindset, and they're super easy to cross. We just want to identify them so you know what you're getting into.
Right, yeah, I think that's a great point. We are kind of in the same format, not kind of, we are the same format of casual commander, so having a distinction of mindset is helpful when figuring out what kind of plays I should be looking to make when I'm playing CEDH.
Exactly, yeah, and I think we just want to emphasize that this is the same format, right? We're just trying to take regular EDH and just play it at its max power. We're not looking to play a separate thing we're trying to play EDH.
Should we talk about really quick, and we don't have to, that CDH is a stupid name because competitive commander is not exactly what it is.
It's not really what it is.
It should be called full power commander.
Yeah, or like max power. Yeah, Maximilian power CDH.
Maximus Millionus power commandermus.
Yeah.
Latin. It's closer in my mindset of CDH. I'm playing the most powerful things as optimally as possible. The competitive aspect, I feel like, puts a little bit of a... You know, we're going to be rules lawyering and make sure the no takes back he's whatsoever, no matter what.
Yeah, it's a negative connotation that it puts on the format. But that's not really what it is.
And I feel like it's too late at this point.
It's branded itself as that, as CEDH, and that's
what
it is.
We can't change it at this point. Sorry, back to.
No, I think that's a great point. Don't be sorry. That was an awesome point that we should bring up here. Yeah. So what is the mindset that we are talking about here that we've been referring to? The document specifies that the short version is to make the plays that increase your chances of winning.
Now, normally that means within the game, like within the individual game that you're playing, but sometimes it can mean like play to win like the tournament. And we can get into that a little bit too of like tournament CDH, tournament commander is almost an entirely other level of CDH in my mind. They're not necessarily separate metagames, but tournament CDH is an even more refined list of commanders that you can play, whereas CDH I feel like is very deep.
Yeah, I feel like CEDH is the format that has a ton of decks, but there are a couple of decks that have these badges on them that say TEDH on them, and that's just like a title that they have to them is how I would identify that.
So like sometimes in a tournament, you can make a decision where you'll want to draw with your opponents because giving yourself a draw is better for you and gives you a higher chance to actually win the entire tournament. So although you are not playing to win the individual game, you're just drawing the game, it can give you a better option to win the tournament. I think that's an important distinguishment to make.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that too, because there's a lot of risk that goes into CEDH. I think something else that's important that we mentioned too is that you are on average going to be winning about 25% of your games if you're playing at your best.
Right, and that would be good. Like 25% win rate would be, in my opinion, that's like a good win rate to have. That is hard to achieve with most decks. I feel like don't really achieve that win record on an individual deck record. Certain pilots can achieve a higher win percentage than that, but 25% would be a very good win rate, I think.
Knowing that also helps you identify when you should be going for draws in a tournament as opposed to playing for the win, because you are trying to maximize the amount of points that you can get in a tournament, and you'll get points for draws, but you won't get points for losses.
Right.
So it's just a strategy that you're employing.
Yeah.
But some of the other things that this means, that when we're increasing our chances of winning, this means that we are eliminating certain plays that you might see in casual EDH.
Right.
Things like spite plays, which is any time that you do something to someone else because fuck you, that's why.
Sometimes, a lot of times, you'll see players on the way out, I still have this lightning bolt in my hand, so I'll kill your creature and then I'll die. In CDH, we wouldn't really do that as much because lightning bolting the creature doesn't actually achieve anything for you. You're still losing, so there's no point to do it. Don't king make. Don't make it more difficult for somebody else to win on your way out. That doesn't actually help you.
That's the next one then. King making. Making actions where you are purposefully causing someone else to win the game.
Right. Now, sometimes this is unavoidable. Sometimes you have to kingmake. There's no option. Someone is presenting a win. You could either let them win the game or stop them, and the very next player is going to win right after that, and you just have to make a decision. I'm deciding either way whether I do something or not. But sometimes it's avoidable, and when it is avoidable, I think it's important to try to avoid to kingmake if it doesn't actually help you in any way.
Yeah. Normally, I say whatever is going to buy me the most amount of time is going to give me the best chances of winning, and a lot of what you're trying to do in CEDH, as we're playing to win, we are playing to all of our outs. So even if my out is a sliver of a percentage point, because maybe there's going to be an extra Rhystic Study draw and someone will have interaction all of a sudden,
right?
That's still a way that you can get out of that situation.
Yeah, I think it's best to still try to stop the win as it's presented. So if someone has Demonic Consultation Thoric on the stack and you know the player after them also has that in their hand, I'm still going to counter the one that's on the stack, because who knows, maybe by the time the player gets to their turn, they have to take an emergency bathroom break and are disqualified from the tournament, and then great, I win the game. You know what I mean? Like, you're never, like, something could happen. Yes, not many actions are taking place from one thing to the next, but something could happen.
Yeah, exactly. So again, play to your outs. Random decisions is another thing that we're kind of cutting out here, which is like making a decision based on a die roll.
Yeah, rolling a die to see who you're going to attack first. That doesn't happen quite as much in CDH. There's always someone that you should be attacking, probably.
Yeah,
there's always
exactly
a right choice.
Yeah, right. Whether it's someone uses their life total as a resource more than other decks, or they're actively the threat, and player removal sometimes is the best removal.
Right. Sometimes you want to offer up a removal for their creature if they have an untapped Timna. Well, I'm going to attack my Ragavan into you because I don't think you're going to block with your Timna anyway, stuff like that.
Yeah, again, we're trying to play with a strategy of winning and not necessarily just play to see how the game goes out of randomness.
We're not trying to do our thing. I think that's the difference between Casual Commander and Casual Commander. Everyone wants everyone to do their thing, which is great in Casual Commander. I want you to be able to play your zombies. I want me to be able to do my extra turns. We all want to do our thing. But in CDH, all our thing is winning the game. So we can't let everyone, you know, my thing is that my deck wants to do its thing. I want to cast Ad Nauseam and resolve it and cast Thassa's Oracle afterwards. That's my deck's thing. It doesn't really work the same way. So
you could look at it as we are all trying to do our thing, and we're trying to do our thing so aggressively that we will play all kinds of interaction and tutors to make sure that we can do our thing.
I don't want you to do your thing, though. In Casual Commander, I kind of do want you to do your thing.
I
want to
see your thing,
I don't want you to do your thing.
I don't want to see my thing.
I want to do my thing on turn two.
Here's another thing that we don't do. Conceding the game to deny any opponents an advantage. Like if someone's going through an infinite loop with Dockside Extortionist and Emil the Blessed making infinite treasures, someone goes, oh, I'm contributing 5 artifacts and enchantments to this Dockside count. I'm just going to scoop here so that they can't go through their loop.
I have seen a couple of tournament organizers make their own rules locally that you can't scoop at instant speed. You have to scoop at sorcerer speed on your turn. You can't scoop in response to somebody doing something. It's just like not allowed in the game according to the specific tournaments. And I think that's a good adjustment to make for CDH.
I think so too. Yeah. Because otherwise you do have this happen. And I think it's kind of a really silly thing to do because it takes your odds of winning the game from even any sort of a percentage point to immediately 0%, and it gives 2 other opponents like a significantly higher percentage point than after that to win the game.
Now, how do you feel about it in tournaments? If the person who is winning the game, you know for sure, has less points than you, if they win, they'll have the same amount of points than you. But if one of the other players wins and they get a loss, and there's no chance that they could face you in the top 16, is there a tournament world where you would want to scoop to try to kingmake on purpose because you're trying to win the tournament?
I don't know, because I feel like it's not like that eliminates someone from the top 16.
It eliminates that player,
but it just puts someone else in the tournament. So I feel like that's kind of not my goal in that scenario.
What if
I feel
it's like a bad matchup for you? What if you don't want that player because you think they're, one, a good player, or two, their deck, you think you're playing Kinnan and they're playing Rock'sai and their turbo deck is pretty good against you? Would you scoop? I mean, this is assuming that it's allowed at the tournament that you're at. There's no rules against scooping against the speed.
Oh, well, okay.
Obviously. If there are rules, you don't do it.
In that case, because I'm allowed to play within the rules, I think what you would do is you scoop then.
Right. But isn't that kind of weird? Because I'd feel bad about that. I don't know if that I could actually do that. But like mathematically, it sounds like it feels like a right that I should do that.
But that's why the general consensus is scooping at sorcery speed is the way to go. So you kind of avoid all of those kind of feel bad scenarios.
It feels like a loophole to me. It feels like you're taking advantage of a loophole. And even if loopholes are within the rules, they're called loopholes for a reason. That means that they're bad, but they're technically not bad.
Again,
so
it's still a negative connotation that goes to that specifically.
But I don't know that I could fault someone for doing it, to be honest. I just don't know that I would.
No, I think you would just like kind of gain a reputation if that's something that you did. So like maybe your local LGS meta would move away from Dockside Extortionist decks and just start winning the game with Thassa's Oracle Demonic Consultation, where that doesn't really apply as much.
That's another thing that I feel like comes up in CDH is technically you are allowed to lie in Magic. Like if it's hidden information, you don't have to reveal correct information. There are some judges that will say certain things about this. If it's revealed information, you have to tell your opponent. If they Gitaxian probe you and you lie and say, no, that wasn't in my hand, that's no good. I don't think you do that.
No, because that is revealed information that has to be known.
But there's nothing stopping you from telling your opponent that you have a Force of Will in your hand if you don't, or you're not going for a win when you are. But the issue is you will get a reputation. So if players know that you do lie, they're going to tell everyone else. If I know that you're a liar, before we even start, I'm letting the whole table know, everyone, person X is a liar. They lied before, they'll do it again. Do not believe them. And that reputation will follow you. Like the CDH community is small enough that online or in person, people will start to know that you're a liar.
Yeah, it's really the aspect of poker in Magic where that's kind of exemplified the most, because you really are playing your opponents even more than you're playing your deck.
Right. And it's also important to remember that your opponents don't have your best interest in mind. That's something that is said a lot at 60-card 1v1 tournaments, but it's not said a lot at CDH tournaments, or maybe it is. I haven't been to a ton of CDH tournaments recently, but your opponents don't have your best interest in mind. Don't listen to them. I say this a lot. You should not listen to your opponent's politicking. You are allowed to, do whatever you want, obviously. Listen to the words that they're saying, but you don't have to make actions based on what they're telling you. If they think that your play is stupid, great. They're your opponent. They shouldn't like your plays. Like, it's okay. Don't let them influence you what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. They don't know the cards in your hand. You know your deck. You know your cards. Like, have confidence in your plays that you're making. Unless there's something you genuinely don't know. And then, like, a judge says, no, actually, that's how the card interaction works. And then, yes, go ahead and then you can do something.
If someone is reminding you about a Dranith Magistrate, listen to them when they say that. But,
yes.
But make a decision based off of what you know is correct. Don't let someone influence you to make a decision.
Yes, again, listen, but make your own decision. Yeah, okay. So that's pretty much the philosophy of CEDH and how we're kind of defining what CEDH is. So I think we can start to get into it a little bit more now.
Great, I agree with all that.
I mentioned how CEDH is a little bit more like the constructed formats, yeah, like Modern and stuff. And there's pretty much like a set metagame for those formats, even though it is the Wild West. You have thousands upon thousands of cards.
We are at an interesting time where cards are getting printed at an alarming rate. Very fast.
No, I'm alarmed.
There's a lot of good cards that are getting printed very quickly. And in CEDH, it's just harder to test these cards quickly as it is to test them on Magic Online with when games are 10 minutes long with 1v1 formats. These games are going to take 45 minutes to, you know what I mean? Even the fast ones are going to take a half hour. It's hard to test all of these new cards as they're coming out. So we know a little bit, we have an idea, but there is still a lot of unknown information.
Especially because with this being a singleton format, especially if the card isn't something that you actively want to tutor all the time, sometimes it's really hard to find the card.
New cards in my deck and I don't see them for months. They just don't come up. I have no idea how good the card is because I just don't get to see it.
No, it's such a shame.
Yeah, it's such a shame.
Maybe I should be tutoring for those cards more just to see what they do. But yeah, so we should get into what the metagame is. So much like how there is a rock, paper, scissors of these constructed formats, CEDH also has a rock, paper, scissors, but the names of the styles of strategies is just a little bit different. It's kind of like Starbucks.
Okay.
You know how Starbucks has different names for smalls and larges and mediums?
Yeah.
CEDH has different names for aggro, control, and
mid-range. Yeah.
Well, kind of. I mean, mid-range is mid-range.
We use mid-range, but to me, mid-range in CEDH really means control more often than not.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they mean, is like grindy, card advantage, strong end games.
Yeah, but you're still trying to control the game.
Right.
But instead of doing like 1v1 removal spells, you're trying to gain advantage over three different players instead.
Yeah, with card advantage and counter spells mainly.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of being like black, green, red based, these decks are normally like blue based because that's where a lot of your resources are going to be.
Yeah, I feel like the main archetypes that I see talked about the most are turbo, mid-range, stacks.
Yeah, those are the three.
You would think combo would be one of them, but combo is all of them. All decks are combo decks.
All decks are combo decks. A lot of decks are storm decks, too.
A lot of decks
awesome.
Are storm decks, although the storm cards is really like one storm payoff, and it's just brain freeze or something.
Or a lot of times there's not even storm payoffs, but you just cast things an infinite amount of times, which is storming.
So instead of aggro creature decks like what you would see in other 1v1 formats, we don't really have very many just like actual attacking creature decks. There are things like Winota that doesn't see quite so much play anymore, and there are things like Nigella that can put some pressure on, but realistically the pressure is not really the main plan.
There's no goblin guides in this format.
The closest we have is the Sarah Ascendant,
which is a trap card,
and I don't think it's actually very good. But in place of those type of aggro decks, we have turbo decks. So we have decks like Rogsai, as people call it, that are just like the fastest version of Grixis that you can get. Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation, very fast ad nauseums, turn one Wheel of Fortunes into more fast mana into Underworld Breach. To me, this is like 0.0 of our format. This is where the format is, and then everything else is a reaction
to the ability to win on turn one or turn two.
Turn two more often than one, and turn three, I feel like, is the most consistent that these decks will actually win.
That's normally what it is. A lot of times what they're doing is they're setting up for the turn three win. Like, they're playing out some mana on turn one. On turn two, they'll play a
Rhystic Study, normally card advantage, and then turn three is for a win, but sometimes that win can come earlier or much later out of nowhere.
Depending on what you have or what you think your opponents have. have too, because if you don't expect interaction out of your opponents, you could also just like put super quick wins on in on the stack.
That's kind of like the starting point is like to me is like the turbo decks, and then the answer to the turbo deck is something like Timnecrom, which is more like a mid-range deck, which kind of can look kind of like a control deck. All of these words are wishy-washy, but in my mind, Timnecrom is using that same Grixis shell, but slowing it down a couple turns. Instead of trying to win on turn two or three, they're trying to win on turn five or six and replacing some of the fast mana with more card advantage.
Yeah, they're trying to outvalue the entire table and wait until the fast decks have already blown all of their cards and everyone else has blown all of their interaction on stopping the fast decks, so that then with its absorbent amount of cards can tutor for its win and just go off from there.
Blue Farm is considered by most to be the most powerful deck. I don't know if it's actually true, if it's the best deck or if it's just the most played deck because it plays the most amount of good cards. To me, it's like the Jund of our format of just like it plays all mythic rares and all really good cards. Every single card packs a huge punch, plays the best card advantage, plays the best win conditions. It does everything that Rogside does, but just with a little bit more protection, a little bit more cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Why it's called Blue Farm is kind of interesting.
Oh,
originally,
I was going to put that later.
Were you
going
to talk about that?
Yeah. Okay. No, we can pull that up to right now, yeah.
It's called Blue Farm because originally the list was called Mad Farm when it was a Mardu list, when it was playing Timna and Bruce. They looked like they were farmers. That's all it was, that Bruce and Timna, the Weaver, and Bruce looks like he had an ox. And
he is a herder.
Right, yeah, they're on a farm. And then also I think the name picked up Mad Farm because what you're doing to the creatures is farming them. You're sacrificing creatures for value, for advantage, things like Culling Ritual and stuff like that. Culling the Weak,
yeah.
What you're doing does kind of feel like farming, like the name kind of makes sense. And I think because the name makes sense both ways, the name really stuck. And then Blue Farm became a deck when they said, what if instead of playing Bruise, we played good cards like Krom? And then the deck over time got slower and slower and slower. Started out as a really fast deck. It was an ad nauseum deck that just played a couple of Force of Will stuff. And then it slowed down over time to be this kind of grind mid-range engine
that doesn't really sacrifice creatures anymore unless really. It's activating Ranger Captain of Eos or Dothy Voidwalker's abilities,
right? Yeah,
so it kind of has lost its all meaning in there, but the name for Timnecrom has stuck. Yeah. For Blue Farm, so if you hear someone say Blue Farm, they just mean Timnecrom
sans green good stuff deck.
Yeah, that's all that means now. Yeah.
After that, so for me, that's the fast deck. The answer to the fast deck is the mid-range deck. To me, the answer to the mid-range deck is something like a Kinnan, like a deck that is like over the top. It doesn't really fit in that mid-range or stacks category, but is a little bit more just like bigger than the Timnecrom lists.
There are some times where you'll hear that like, oh, like a really high power casual deck can beat CEDH decks just because of the random variation that high power casual decks can bring in, the effect that they have on CEDH. Like you can win a surprisingly large amount of games just by having like these kind of strategies and like waiting for the grindiness of the game to come in, and then you can totally come out on top.
A lot of the CDH meta boils down to needing to have certain types of interaction, fast interaction for quick instants and sorceries and stuff like that. So if these high power casual decks can make it into the later game, all of the removal spells are not quite as good anymore because Swords to Plowshare is not that great against Crater Hoof Behemoth.
So if you can build a CEDH deck that captures this essence, you would get decks like Kinnan that just can kind of play really well in the early game. They're in blue, so they have all the interaction that they need to stop the really fast decks from being able to win if they need to, and then push themselves into the late game where they'll be able to make tons of mana and get into huge creatures that get weird card advantage and weird stacks effects that come into play.
Stuff
too,
like
all
Void
of a sudden.
Winner is a super powerful Kinnan piece that you're going to see a lot. If you're used to seeing or playing big blue-green decks in Casual Commander, Kinnan is the version of that for CDH.
Yeah, and it does very well into these metas.
I do think of it as another mid-range deck, though. Timnecrom, mid-range, Kinnan, mid-range. Next deck that I want to talk about is also a mid-range deck. Something like Sissei is another deck that you're going to see a lot at these tables. Sissei being five colors and can access its win condition right through its commander is very, very helpful, and I think is another reason why it like puts it near the top as like a commander that you're going to see a lot.
And then the last variation of decks, the last type of deck that you'll see is a stacks deck. Well, typically in CEDH, these decks are part of the meta, but because mid-range has extended itself to decks like Sisse and decks like Kinnan that play so well under what traditional stack sticks are doing, they have not been seeing as much play as they typically do.
Truthfully, Sisse and Kinnan are like the closest we have to actual stack sticks in the meta, and they're not stack sticks. They do play, sometimes a Sisse will play a Deafening Silence, sometimes a Kinnan will play a Manglehorn. That's kind of the closest that we'll get to true stacks. Even Tim Nakram is playing Dranith Magistrate. So more often than not, we're seeing mid-range decks that are playing a few stacks pieces, and decks like Winota and even Timna Tana, a deck that I love, Blood Pod, are really just not seeing as much play anymore.
No, that's definitely for sure. Your rule of law is kind of the effect that had defined these stacks decks for a long time. Specifically, cards like Archon of Emyria, these rule of law creatures that only allow for one spell to be cast a turn and also had some other effect on them, whether they make certain lands come into play tapped or creatures come into play tapped or whatever else they were. Archon of Emyria in particular was always a great attacker to draw you cards with Timna too. So there was just a lot of different variations of this that you could go into.
And I think what a lot of people have kind of realized as we've seen more tournament stuff is, one, stacks, it can be hard to win on time. In tournaments, you have a 50-minute time limit, and that can be tricky for stacks decks to win in that amount of time. And also, it's just more beneficial to try to win yourself than it is to stop other opponents. You know what I mean? In 1v1, trying to stop your opponent, there's just the one opponent. If you can stop them, you can stop them. But in Commander, you have three opponents to worry about. It's much more difficult to stop what everyone's doing consistently while also winning in enough time.
That's why these three archetypes are what you'll see in CEDH, and that not one of them is like a specific dedicated control deck. You just can't really keep up with the card advantage of trying to deal with all three players like that.
And you will see stacks decks at tournaments. They do exist. You're just not going to see them win as many tournaments or be in as many top 16s. They're just not going to win as much.
It's definitely a lot harder for them, again, because responding to what your opponents is doing is also better than preemptively stopping them from what they're doing.
Yep.
That's kind of what you would see in the meta and what to expect for the types of decks, but we'll get into more of the other commanders that you'll see in the format a little bit later. You know what? Maybe we should actually get into that now, because the next thing we should talk about is how we're going to figure out what deck you're going to play.
I love that. Okay. Yeah. We did talk about a little bit some of the top decks. Tim Nakram, Sisse, Kinnan,
Rograk Silas.
Those are probably considered by most to be, I would say, the top four decks of the format.
When you look on EDH Top 16, which is going to be our favorite resource for finding out the best decks right now.
Another resource right now that you can go and find tournament reports from all over, everywhere.
Exactly. And you'll find tons of deck lists for all these decks as well on here too. But those are the top four. And once you break out of that too, you'll see that Tivit, Najeela, Kenrith, like these other typically very strong EDH commanders are also up here too.
Yeah, Nadu is another one that's made its way
recently. Nadu has made its way up here as well.
I know Atraxa is normally near the top. Chrome Tevishsot is another one that's near the top. And I've also seen a lot of Yuriko lists topping specifically recently in the past few weeks.
And Magda's had an incredible year too. So there's really just like a lot of different directions that you can go into right now in the format. And I think you really just kind of have to figure out where to go.
Yeah.
I think the best way to do that is to know what you want to do to win the game, how you want to win the game.
Start from the win condition and then go backwards.
Yeah. I always mess this up. I always think, oh, what commanders do I want to play?
Right.
But that's so much harder to figure out, because that's way too many questions that you have to ask after that, as opposed to just knowing how you want to win.
Right, and just CDH games are fast. Sometimes it's Dranith Magistrate. Sometimes players are winning on turn two. You're not going to cast your commander every game. So whereas in casual commander, you probably will cast your commander every single game. In CDH, that just might not happen sometimes. So I think it's best to figure out how you want to win the game and then work backwards from there.
Yeah, exactly. So that could just be, oh, I want to win with a Thassa's Oracle Demonic Consultation combo.
That's the main way.
The other best way that you could do it is with Underworld Breach, some sort of Underworld Breach, Lion's Eye Diamond, and Brain Freeze Loop. If you have all three of these cards, you can essentially use Underworld Breach to get back Lion's Eye Diamond and keep recasting Brain Freeze to mill yourself out until your storm's large enough that you can mill out your opponents who will draw cards before you.
The best thing about this win condition is it's a one card win off of intuition. If you can intuition for Underworld Breach, Savine's Reclamation, or Lion's Eye Diamond, no matter what, you're getting the Breach in play. You'll have enough to intuition again from your graveyard, and this time find Brain Freeze and mill your whole library out. It also makes, like, weirdly just Demonic Tutor a one card win condition. If you have enough cards in your graveyard, just Demonic Tutor for Underworld Breach, cast Underworld Breach, cast Demonic Tutor from your graveyard to find either Brain Freeze or Lion's Eye Diamond and go from there. So it's a very efficient win that you can win from one card from a few different places. You don't have to play many bad cards. Yes, Brain Freeze is kind of a bad card,
but it could also technically be interaction if your opponents do something with the top deck of their tutors library
and stuff like that. Yeah, I think the real strength just comes from Underworld Breach. It's just such a powerful card. It can turn so many things into a win condition.
Yeah, so those two win conditions, Thassa's Oracle, Underworld Breach, you will see those two things in a lot of your opponent's decks as well. Dockside Extortionist loops are also a very popular way to win the game, with setting up Dockside with a way to either bounce it back to your hand to recast or flicker it.
Yeah, normally you're going to see this with Emil in decks like Sisse. That's the best deck right now that's using Dockside Loops. That's a really good one. That with infinite mana, you can activate your Sisse just to find the Planeswalkers of your combo, being Nicol Bolas, Oath of Teferi, and Amanatu. I can never remember if it's the M first or the N first. I think it's Animatu, like animal.
Animatu? Do you want to know?
Yes.
Okay, here, let's find out. Oh, it's A-M-I.
Aminatu.
N-A-T-O-U. I didn't know there was an O.
Decks like Thrasios, anything, realistically, I feel like the Thrasios deck that we're seeing the most right now are Rograkh Thrasios decks, and I don't even... Do they play a Dockside? Yeah, they must. They probably... Do they play Teemer Sabertooth, though? Or maybe they play Baron Master Wizard sometimes?
Let's find out. Here's a deck that won a tournament. This Thrasios Rograkh deck is on 23 creatures.
Nice. Are any of them Baron Master Wizard or Teemer Sabertooth or the new frog?
That's Dockside, Baron Master Wizard, and that's the one that they're on. Just Baron Master Wizard, yeah.
Other decks are, sometimes you'll see Atali's pop up, and Atali does use Teemer Sabertooth.
That's a turbo deck right there.
That's another turbo deck. That one's trying to go very, very fast.
That one also is in the category of Food Chain,
yeah,
which also other decks like Atraxa fall into, where those decks are trying to slam a Food Chain and then a creature you can cast from exile, so that you can keep exiling that creature for more mana than it costs.
Something like Eternal Scourge or Mist Hollow Griffin or Squee?
Yeah.
And then no matter what, you'll make infinite mana just for your creatures. You can recast your Atraxa and draw through your whole deck, or recast your Atali and exile your opponent's whole decks.
Exactly, and win that way.
Other win conditions, Teferi, Sol Ring, Displacer Kitten is one that you'll see a lot of, just like cards that are like often good. Displacer Kitten works really well with Tivit. It works really well with Dockside Extortionist and Atraxa. If you can find any of those overlaps, putting it with Teferi is pretty nice, because although Teferi can be a not so great silence, because you don't want to pass your turn with Teferi, because your opponents will also benefit from that, but it can help in your own loop by protecting your win condition with Teferi, Sol Ring, and Displacer Kitten. You can use the Displacer Kitten's ability off of the Sol Ring cast to flicker the Teferi, allowing you to activate the Teferi again, returning the Sol Ring to your hand and drawing a card, drawing through your whole deck and making infinite mana. That's the way that people win a lot in CDH.
Exactly. And it's growing in popularity because you can't interact with it after the Teferi comes down. Outside of that, I think a lot of the other win conditions that you're going to see regularly are based off of whatever commander that they're playing. Like Magda specifically is looking to make 5 artifacts and sacrifice them to find Clock of Omens and an Artifact Dwarf, so that that way you can tap the Artifact Dwarf and the Clock of Omens to untap the Artifact Dwarf, making a treasure, use that treasure and the Artifact Dwarf to untap the Artifact Dwarf again, and just make infinite treasures that way that you can sacrifice with Magda and go get an almost infinite number of win conditions after that from there. So I would categorize like Thassa's Oracle as a win con, Dockside Extortionist loops as a win con, Underworld Breach as a win con, Teferi Displacer Kitten as a win con, and then pretty much commander win cons is what I would say.
There's the Food Chain win con also.
Oh, Food Chain. So there are 6.
And a lot of these overlap too. Like the Thassa's Oracle and Underworld Breach normally overlap. They don't always overlap. Sometimes you're playing Yuriko and it's just the Thassa's Oracle off of a Doomsday. Oftentimes you're playing Thassa's Oracle with Underworld Breach, and brain freezing your opponent so they mill out their whole library and then passing the turn is the way that you could win with Underworld Breach that's not Thassa's Oracle.
But I do want to say not every blue deck needs Thassa's Oracle. Like,
right.
I think most Jeskai decks don't need Thassa's Oracle, because you can just win with the Underworld Breach, and there's really no cards that are exiling your whole library that you would need Thassa's Oracle to win. So you can just free up a slot in your deck without needing to play that card.
I think normally you'll see a lot of times people saying, well, once I draw my whole deck, let me just play Thassa's Oracle and win the game that way. It's nice and easy. And yes, technically that's true, but if you're not playing the Tainted Pact Demonic Consultation to get those early wins also, the Thassa's Oracle can be a risky dead card. And oftentimes, like you said, you can just brain freeze Underworld Breach. That's a win on its own. You don't need the Thassa's Oracle. If you're playing green, if you've made infinite mana or a big chunk of mana, you can play all your creatures in Finale of Devastation, which is a card that can also be a tutor and just find something that you need early in the game. But then late game, you can give your creatures plus a billion and attack your opponents if you're at that stage anyway. So once you're at the stage where you've drawn your whole deck, there are normally other things that you can do with cards that are less bad on their own to still win the game. And to me, that's kind of like the spirit of CDH, is like finding those weird ways to win. When I want to cast a spell and swan song my spell and endurance the thing to the bottom of my library and then draw my whole deck again, like I want those win conditions that allow me to play as few bad cards as possible, because that's the format.
Yeah, because what happens when Thassa's Oracle's in your opening hand?
Right.
And then it sucks, and then you end up putting it under Chrome Mox, and then you go, I don't have a way to win now.
Whereas if you're playing Demonic Consultation and Tainted Pact, if you have the Thassa's Oracle in your hand, you can at least say, okay, well, if I find a tutor, then I have a win right here. You know what I mean? It's at least something.
Yeah, otherwise it's just a completely dead card. So.
Are there any other win conditions that people will see often that we didn't talk about? I mean, Birthing Pod, Kiki Jiki stuff?
Yeah, I guess you'll see that sometimes still, too. Yeah.
If you see me playing.
If you're playing against Dylan on Playday or something like that.
Birthing Pod gets rid of a 3-drop. The 3-drop gets Felidar Guardian, which can flicker the Birthing Pod. Sacrifice the Felidar Guardian to go get Karmic Guide. Karmic Guide brings back the Felidar Guardian from the graveyard, which flickers the Birthing Pod. Activate the Birthing Pod, sacrifice Felidar Guardian to get Kiki Jiki. Tap Kiki to make a copy of Karmic Guide. The copy brings back Felidar Guardian. Felidar flickers the Kiki Jiki. Tap Kiki Jiki to make a copy of Felidar Guardian over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I love saying it. As you can tell.
It rolls off of your tongue beautifully. Yeah. I think anything else that you could see a lot of other ways to make infinite mana, but I think a lot of them might also be commander specific or color pie specific.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of different ways in mono green to make infinite mana. Ashaya and Quirion Ranger is the most common 2-card combo that you'll see, where in addition to other creatures that they have, they can make infinite green mana that way.
You need something that has a landfall benefit, right? Because you can bounce the Quirion back and forth forever, but you need something that's going to be a payoff.
Yeah, there needs to be other things, but those are the 2 cards that create the engine to get infinite mana.
I think that's how it is, yeah.
That one is always the hardest one for me to figure out. Those fucking mono green ones.
We talked about the Magda commander specific win con, but there's also Najeela that with Derevi or a couple of other things can it get infinite combats. There is Kidden that with Basalt Monolith can make infinite colorless, and then with some sort of X spell or a Treasure Vault land or something else, you can activate Kidden all the way through your whole deck.
There's Tivit, which with Time Sieve, because Tivit makes the exact number of treasures you need to sacrifice to Time Sieve to take an extra turn. As long as you are attacking the right players and leaving everyone in the game to create 5 artifacts at a time, you can take infinite turns that way.
There's a whole bunch of others. We could talk about Kurik win conditions, and we can talk about Old Stick Fingers. What did we say at the beginning?
Oh, God. Don't worry about what Old Stick Fingers does.
There's a plethora of other ones. But if you're going to go to a tournament, if you're going to play online, these are the decks and the win conditions that you'll see the most often.
These are the good decks and win conditions that you'll see most often, we should say. Yeah.
Should we talk about a commander that you should pick if you're going to be a beginner?
Yeah, we should talk about some decks that are good for beginners. The first one that I always think of is Godo.
Godo.
Because Godo is just count to 11 and then you can win the game.
Yeah, can I disagree?
Yes.
I'm going to disagree. I think Godo is great if you are a specific type of Magic player.
Yeah.
If you like Tron, if you're a big mana deck,
yeah.
If you like to do your one thing and say, opponents, do you have an answer? No, I win. I like that strategy sometimes. But the issue with Godo being a beginner deck is it doesn't actually teach you any skills about commanders.
That is a great
CDH
point.
CDH specifically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the cards that you're playing in Godo are just Godo cards. They're not CDH cards outside of Godo.
That's true, yeah.
So as a beginner, you will know Godo very well, but it might be a little bit trickier to understand the ins and outs of all of the other stuff going on in the format.
Yeah, because instead you're just watching. Maybe if you're like a really good auditory learner and you want to just like sit back and learn about the format, like you might get really good at timing out when to do your combo. That might be a skill that helps you with, but maybe every deck would help you with that. All right, don't play Goto if you're a beginner. It fucking sucks.
To me, something like Najeela is like a perfect deck for a beginner because, one, you're playing basically only staples. Najeela, for the most part, only plays really good cards. Recently, we've gotten a couple warriors that like to see play Najeela that don't see play other places, but for the most part, you're playing 90 CDH staples. That's what that deck is made up of. And it also, Najeela can oftentimes feel like other formats if you come from Modern or Legacy or even Casual Commander. A lot of times your main backup plan, or that sounds like a weird way to say that, because your plan is to just win the game with infinite combat steps, but oftentimes what Najeela is doing is just casting Najeela, attack, make a warrior, and just wait until someone does something and keep on making warriors. And that can feel very similar to other styles of Magic. So if you like that style of just attack, protect the queen style of Magic, Najeela is a great beginner deck, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I have a friend that's getting into CEDH more and more, and he's been really liking like blue-black control strategies and is on Talion, and I think that's been a great beginner deck because it kind of forces you to understand what's going on in the format a little bit more. It forces you to pay attention because you have a more reactive deck, and you still have card advantage in the command zone, so it kind of gets you addicted to wanting to make sure that you have that in a commander, too.
Talion is a commander that we didn't really talk about that, to me, is in the similar vein as Yuriko, although it probably does not share a ton of cards to Yuriko because Yuriko plays so many weird ones. It does the same thing of stick a commander early, gain card advantage as much as possible throughout the game, eventually finish on Thassa's Oracle.
I feel like it's more akin to like a slower blue farm,
It is blue farm. It's blue farm without the extra colors and the extra oomph. It's hipster blue farm. It's
hipster blue farm, yeah. Bare bones, minimalist blue farm.
Right, yeah. The advantages, I guess you get to play maybe a couple extra basics.
Yeah, there you go.
But really only like one or two because Tainted Pact. You need to make sure you only have one of every basic.
One of every basic. Or you could have a maximum of four basics then.
If you have the snow-covered lands.
Yeah, exactly. You said Yuriko too. Do you think Yuriko's a good deck for beginners?
I do. A little bit of the same problem as Goto, where you're buying a lot of ninjas that are not going to see play anywhere else besides this Yuriko deck.
Yeah, the staple thing's the issue.
But you are still buying a lot of staples also. You're buying the Demonic Tutors and the Imperial Steals of Imperial Tutors. And when I say buying, you could be proxying also, you know, obtaining in some way. That's totally fine. Yuriko does play a decent amount of staple cards, similar to Najeela in that you're doing something that feels familiar if you come from 1v1 formats where you're just attacking for value. I think it's probably in the same vein as Najeela. Najeela, you will get more overall staples. You get in five colors. You get an easy access to the whole format. Whereas Yuriko, you're just pigeoned into those two colors. But I still think it's another great deck for beginners.
I don't want to say that as a beginner, you can't play any other deck. These are just decks that might just be easier to get into.
Yeah, even something like Blue Farm is probably another one that's a great beginner deck. It's
honestly
the most popular deck for a reason. It's easy to pick up. Yes, there is a threshold of skill that you'll cap into. Is that the right way to say any of that?
No, I think what you want to say is there is definitely a high ceiling for skill.
Yeah, if you are a skilled player, you will play Blue Farm much better than a brand new player. That is for sure.
And
certain.
Honestly, if you're getting into the format, like, that's a great way to start.
And you know your deck has a super high ceiling. You can feel confident in learning your deck inside and out.
Yeah, a deck that doesn't need its commander either, right? So, like, I guess if you really like the aspect of casting your commander, like, you still can. They're great card advantage engines. But, like, you play all the best ways to win the game. It might just be the best way to get into the format, because you do end up picking up all of the staples in the best colors in the format right now. You get a feel for what the format is by playing the best deck, and then from there, after you see what other players are doing with other decks, like, you can just start to branch out from there because you already have so many of the cards that you need.
Kinnan is one that people hear a lot about as a new player. Get into Kinnan because it's very similar to casual commander decks a lot of the times. This can be a trap. Kinnan, I feel like, is a deck that is secretly actually kind of tricky to play. There's a couple of things to note if you are playing Kinnan early on and you're a beginner. You're mulliganing for turn one Kinnan. That's your goal a lot of the time. And don't really focus all the time on prioritizing activating Kinnan. Yes, it can be good if you got nothing else to do. If you can cast a spell, you should probably cast a spell instead. There are times when that's not correct. There's heuristic study, rule of law, whatever, whatever. But more often than not, you want to get on the board early. You want to get as much mana in as possible. And if you have a threat in your hand and you can cast it, a lot of the times, fucking just get it out. Because if you whiff, it can feel really bad.
Yeah, you really don't want to roll those dies.
Decks that I would not suggest for beginners, if we can, Sisse. I've been playing Sisse recently. The deck is awesome. It's very powerful. I think it's tricky. I have found that it is very difficult to play perfectly. I'm not the best player, so take that with a grain of salt. But there are a lot of lines, and you kind of have to know the ins and outs of all of them to know where you can win the game from, because you can win the game from so little, so often with that deck, but knowing when is it appropriate time, there's a lot of the times you'll go through the whole line, and you'll realize at the end, fuck, I'm a mana short after I've done all this shit. You know what I mean? And now all my stuff is out here. People can just remove it. So that can be a little bit tricky. But if you know the shortcuts to playing the deck, you can obviously get to learn the deck pretty quickly. But I wouldn't pick it up as a beginner. I think there are other decks that are better for beginners.
I think that's fair. I think decks like that that have like very specific lines that they're going for, I think are going to be the most difficult to pick up. So I think just kind of getting a grasp for what the format is going to be more important than learning what those lines are. I think it's more worth it getting into something that's going to just see more universal play.
Right. Now, not saying don't, if you love Sisay, play Sisay. I'm not telling you to not play Sisay. I'm just saying it's a tricky deck, and if you're new to the format, you're going to have a harder time. That's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, if you're cool with that, hell yeah, go
again,
for it.
Play whatever you want. Play whatever you want. These are just some of the recommendations that we might have.
Magda is another one that feels like it's great for beginners, but you have so many uniquely specific cards that interact in very strange ways. You can play the whole deck completely at instant speed for the most part. That's not exactly true, but with Magda you can do a lot of things at instant speed, so knowing when it's right to just jam, which is rare, and when it's right to wait until your opponent has a Thassa's Oracle on the stack and say, okay, I'll try to win right now, that can be tricky to figure out when those windows are.
I got a question for you here though. Can I take my favorite high power commander and just turn it into a CEDH deck?
What a trick question. The answer to your question is yes. Technically, in my opinion, all decks are CDH decks. Some decks are just bad CDH decks, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You can take your Edgar Markov deck and you say, my deck beats all my opponents. It's a great high power deck. I just want to make it a CDH deck. Sure, you can do that. I am not confident you will have a high win record with a strategy like that. You can feel free to prove me wrong, but oftentimes what we're looking for in power in terms of CDH is a lot different than just juicing up your casual deck. It's just different. You have to be able to also not lose the game in the first few turns, and that is a big distinction from casual commander.
The other distinction is that we are trying to win in the most efficient way, and I think that just powering up a casual deck might also imply that there's a lot of inefficient ways that you're trying to win the game that are just like, because it's a little bit more on theme, or this is just some like a way that you're trying to attack the format in a different way. You can get wins that way, but you might not hit that 25% mark that we're looking for.
And if you want to get into CDH, I think it's best to just play a CDH deck. These pilots have been playing these decks for years and years and years.
Yeah.
To be so bold as to think you know more than the whole CDH community that has been working on this shit for years, the ego you must have would be insane. I get the desire to want to brew decks, and you absolutely should brew decks, but in my opinion, you should first play a deck that is well-known and well-played, understand the format from that aspect, and then go, okay, now that I understand the format from playing it hands-on, now I know how to brew to attack this format. I would play a deck that is well-known for like 6 months before you brew a deck in CDH.
I don't go up to scientists and tell them that I know science.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Although scientists are wrong sometimes.
Science is a liar sometimes.
Science is a liar sometimes.
Make Sir Isaac Newton look like a bitch. So, listen, I don't know if you noticed this, but a lot of these decks are very expensive.
Yes, much money.
Much money. So how do we fix that problem?
First way, proxies.
That's the best way to
do it. You can make your proxies. You can cut them out on a little piece of paper, slip them over top of a card. We use philo.github.
It's
I don't know.
GitHub link. Some if you nonsense. Search, make card proxies on the internet. For free.
I think that one's pretty good. You can choose any art that exists, which is pretty nice. You can switch through them, print them all in a sheet, and just cut them out. I think that's the best way to do it. I also like collecting Magic cards, just like personally, I like over time accumulating a real life collection. So even though I have three CDH decks together right now, and there are a couple proxies in each of them, it's like fun for me to try to like get those proxies to become real cards. If you don't have the funds, do not feel pressured to do that. Most people in the CDH community that I've experienced and interacted with want to play your, what is the expression?
I don't want to play against your wallet. I want to play against you.
Right, exactly. So we don't care if you have a proxied Mana Crypt. Mox Diamond is $500. I do not fault you for not having it. That's ridiculous.
And that's right now. Like, right. Who's to right say now. What these prices are going to be? And I sound like I'm trying to sell a timeshare.
Yeah. A lot of CDH players, we got our cards before they were too expensive either. So it's not like I didn't spend $5,000 on each of my decks. My dual lands, my bad lands were $70 when I got them 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't want to set that expectation up for anyone. So that's why proxies are extremely heavily encouraged in the format. And you'll even see a lot of tournaments that are proxy friendly.
Yeah, most of them are, I would say. I'd say the few ones that aren't are the SCG tournament circuit. They have a CDH tournaments that are not proxy friendly. And I think that's okay too. I think it's okay to have some tournaments that are all real cards. I think that's fun. I think it's fun looking at the difference in the metas and figuring out, okay, there's a lot less Time Twisters in this top 16 than the other one. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, there's a lot less Duel Ends even right. that you'll see in the entirety of the tournament.
But I think it's super important for the availability of our format and for our format to grow at all. Proxies kind of need to exist because of the reserve list. Like, there's just no way that the format could exist without proxies due to the reserve list. It would just be impossible. No one could play.
And honestly, I had a thing against proxies at first.
Yeah, most players do.
And then I started playing with proxies and went, this is so much fun.
Right. I just
look at all this joy that I've been denying myself right. for years.
Your options are either like not play the format that's fun and cool, or have a bunch of people to play it with. Like, even if you have all the real cards, if you have no one to play with, how is that fun?
That's the thing. I built a first chain food sliver deck.
Nice.
Fuck.
Food Chain First Sliver.
Food Chain First Sliver was my first CEDH deck that I built, and I didn't want to put proxies in it, so I had this very powered down version that had troubles getting its pips,
yeah.
didn't have any dual lands in it, and it was just not great. And
not good experience, right?
I had so much less fun playing that than when I actually proxied up a deck and went, holy shit, this is what this feels like. This feels so much better and much more fun.
Yeah, like if you're going to do it, just do it. If you're going to play CDH, just play CDH. Play with the Mana Crypts. I think that's like the fun thing. And it also gives you a place to put your Mana Crypts. Because I know there's a lot of casual yeah. Commander players that want to play the Mana Crypts that they pulled in a pack. I get that. Casual Commander is not a great spot for that, but CDH is.
Yes.
So, like, you should put your Mana Crypts in your CDH decks and play CDH.
Exactly. And then that way you have a CDH deck, and you can still have as many casual decks as you want, but now you have something for those cards.
And then you have a freeing experience when you're brewing your casual deck base. Everything gets to be on theme then.
Yeah. Now, a lot of tournaments, though, won't let you play proxies that you printed out and slipped in front of a jank thing from a pack that you opened 10 years ago.
Right, yeah.
And, by the way, when I shuffle up decks that have real cards in them versus and some of those, and
there's no way you
could
know.
There's
no way you could know.
Especially if your deck's like 50-50 even too. Like, there's no way you can tell. But if they'll give you some flack for it, this is what you do. You go to a website like MPC Phil or what's the other one? MakePlayingCards.com, and for like $30 or $40, you can just order your own CEDH deck from there. They won't feel exactly like Magic cards.
I think you can set them to the right setting so that
you can
they do
get
feel
them to
exactly
the right
like
setting.
Magic cards.
I've never done that, to be
yeah.
honest. So
I don't know
I
how
just,
to do it. It's
I just know that these websites exist.
Yeah.
But I like the printing them out for free and cutting them up method, because I still get to choose my art that way.
Some tournaments will give you proxies for the tournament and say, here is a fake card. It looks like a fake card. This is your Time Twister. You can use it. Sometimes you can draw with a Sharpie on those cards they give you for like Huntmaster of the Fells. Remember?
Oh, yeah. The cards that represent what your dual-sided card is.
Something like that. Yeah, you can write on those, and sometimes that'll be good enough for a proxy. It's going to change. Some stores, places will not allow proxies at all, and in that situation, you might have to make some budget swaps and changes.
Yeah, I think that if your LGS does not allow proxies, and that is your place to go to play. And we'll talk about other places to go to play down the line, but I think there are going to be times where you can't just proxy and that you just kind of have to embrace what your local situation is and just kind of fully dive into that instead.
Yeah, that is one option. The other option is to find some places online. Discord is a big hub that you can find stuff. We have a Discord. You can get at our Patreon for $1.
Pretty much all the content creators have their own Discord, which means that they all have their own communities. A lot of them are places that you can go and actually get games. Our Discord always has games going. Pretty much every day there's games going, so you can always ask if people are free on there. Normally what people will do is they'll use audio through Discord and then set up a link through a website called Spell Table, and then you'll just play online with your board and like a webcam or your phone as your camera.
Yeah, we use our phones as camera and just like a shitty stand that you can get on Amazon, or not Amazon, fuck Amazon. You can
fuck Amazon, but like get it at literally any other place.
Yeah, get it somewhere else where it just will hold your phone up and just play that way over Webcam Magic. That's the best way. That's the way that I play CDH the most. Maybe not anymore, but it's a way I play CDH a lot.
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple things that it makes funny.
It makes Gitaxian Probe a little tricky sometimes.
Makes Opposition Agent funny.
Praetor's Grasp is one that it doesn't make possible, basically, because they shouldn't know which card you take out of their deck.
No, it's almost like you have to call their partner and be like, hey, can you go over to their deck and take this card out of it? And don't tell them, though.
Right, yeah.
But just give it back to them to shuffle it up.
So that one's a little bit tricky. There's a couple weird things like that. But besides that, Webcam Magic, I feel like, is a great way for people all over the world to play with each other, which is really nice. It's very accessible, especially for people who can't make get to local game stores, either because your local game store is too far or proxy reasons or a slew of other reasons why you wouldn't be able to get to a store. So it's really great for those reasons, I think, as well. But there are those some, you know, some cards make it a little bit challenging.
I have just a couple other things that I just want to rapid fire off here, I guess. So we did talk about a lot of the main resources that you can go to for some CEDH information, like EDH Top 16, but
that's the big one. That's the one that I use the most, is EDH Top 16. I filter to the most recent deck lists every week. I normally try to check the most recent ones and find new tech for my decks or stuff like that. If you're looking to keep up to date on what the CEDH meta looks like, that's the best one.
That's how you find out what's doing well in tournaments. It's really the best font of information. But that is if you are trying to go meta into CEDH. But again, we've been saying there's other off-meta stuff that you can do. If you want some other ideas for decks, you can also take a look at the CEDH decklist database, which just has some other ideas that you can get there.
Yeah, that one's going to be more closer to CEDH than tournament CEDH, which, like we talked about earlier, are slightly different. We talked about maybe like 10 to 15 decks that are like good CEDH decks.
The best ones.
There's like 100, 200 CEDH decks that are like tier 3, tier 2,
yeah,
that can win, that can spike a tournament, and can do really well.
And that
they just
pool
don't win
just
as much.
Keeps getting bigger every 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. Well, once you play one of those first 10 to 15 decks for your first 6 months and you want to brew something else, you can go to the decklist database to find some ideas of what some other people have been brewing.
And if you don't know what the hell these decks are doing, check out the Commander Spellbook that fully explains combos.
Yeah, that one's a great resource, especially if you're getting used to it. If you just want to see what is Dockside Extortionist combo with, you can just click on it and find all the different things that I'll go with. There are specific ones in CDH and there's specific ones that won't see playing Commander, but it's a great way to get a feel of like how a lot of these combos are working.
And then I would say if you want to see some chatter about CEDH, the best places to go are Discords, curated Discords. Every single Commander has its own Discord pretty much at this point too.
The decklist database is a great way to find Discords for specific Commanders.
Exactly.
And then there's the content creator ones you can find through their socials and stuff like that.
Yeah, so those are the best places to go on Discord. I would say the second best place to go is Twitter.
Yeah, people say bad things about X and Twitter, but I think there's a lot of discussion about CDH that happens on Twitter. And truthfully, I think a lot of it is positive. There's a lot of tournament results and a lot of good stuff happening on Twitter. A lot of conversation going on.
You can try your best to filter out the negative stuff, and it can do pretty well.
Right, yeah. But it's a great source, and it's a great place that a lot of CDH people are hanging out at the same spot for.
Yeah, my Twitter is a positive magic machine, is how I try to curate mine.
Yep.
And then the last one I'll shout out real quick is the CEDH subreddit, which is fine. Unless you like memes where
they're not allowed.
You can't post any images. It's just word posts.
To be honest, the CEDH Reddit was one I researched that I used a ton in the very beginning. I don't use it as much anymore now. It feels like for me, most of the posts are, is this deck good in CEDH? And then the comments are, nope.
Nope. And it has zero upvotes.
And after you see that post over and over and over again, you're like, okay, I don't know if I'm getting as much into this. But if you're new into CEDH, it is a good place to see what the chatter is, what people are talking about. I do think it is good for that if you're new.
Yeah, if you're already on there, you might as well check it out.
Exactly.
So if you want to learn more, what I would suggest is A, go on YouTube and look up more topics like this. We have a solid year and a half of weekly podcasts that we've been doing now on these types of subjects that can help get you more into the game. Go watch gameplay videos. There's a ton of different people out there that are doing gameplay in addition to Play to Win here. So
yeah, stuff like Scrybabies, stuff like Mod Anon, stuff like Mental Misplay, stuff like Playing with Power. There's a bunch of other creators. Those are the first ones that are coming to mind. Definitely go check them all out. Another creator that I want to mention is CEDH TV. If you like the style of gameplay that we do, of like fast-paced cuts, all the ums and uhs out to music, CEDH TV does gameplay very similar to how we do it.
Yeah, 100%. And the other thing I would recommend is playing more games. Just go out there and play games, because that's how you are going to be able to personalize your learning experience and know where you fall short as a CEDH player, so that you know what you need to work on specifically, whether that's casting Thassa's Oracle with your Esper Sentinel in play and then losing to someone else casting a spell while you have no cards in your library.
I've done that. I've been there.
I've done that too, and I will do that again.
Absolutely. With Talion, that's another one. I've done that.
I haven't done that with Talion yet, but
you will.
Now that it's in Kenrith,
I will. Yeah, absolutely.
But that's I think a great way to. I don't have a way to wrap this podcast up.
I think that's how you should end it. I don't have a great way to end this podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olin Groompy, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Sean in the Ice, Mark Civilo, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, I scrolled way too fast. Demon of Rosgrease, Cornel Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Godo 9, Kawaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Huge shout out to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use our code PLAYTOWIN5 at our affiliate link for 5% off.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Orjan, Mystic Muffin Man, Nick Saxby, Jacob Bauer, Reactive, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H, X Tyler the Tree X, Mallcraft, Driving Crooner, Jabaha, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast. This time, it's brought to you by Optimus Prime.
To me, that sounded exactly like Optimus Prime.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.